Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Studio G and our discussions on women in leadership. Tonight we will continue our focus this week on how the styles and principles of an Omega leader can influence leadership. Here this week on the road and in the studio, we have Lori Beth Jones, speaker and author of 14 books, and the book leading our discussion today, Jesus CEO. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm in Sedona. Studio G has expanded tonight, huh? I'm in Sedona with my mother. Shelley's on the road. And you're
hey, everybody. And here we are in La Mesa representing the business pillar. We have Vicky Arciaga. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you.
And on the road in between San Diego and Arizona, we have Shelley Buckner also representing the business pillar. Say
good
hello,
evening.
Shelley.
How's it going?
Going great. And I'm Melissa Olson, representing the education pillar, and your humble hostess tonight is Shelley is on the road. So, Lori, we're going to pass it to you, and I think you're going to pass it on to Vicky.
All righty. So, Shelley likes us always to begin with a definition of what is an Omega leader, and Vicky has been prepped and prepared for this. So, hit it, Vicky.
Yeah, in the last 10 seconds.
Right.
Well, Omega leader is a very, very complex and the ultimate goal that we want to achieve. Let me back up. An alpha leader is leadership style. Is that it's very directive, a little bit autocratic, and the beta style is a little bit more collaborative and looks for consensus. Either one of those might be working in a good situation, but not in all situations. And the concept of Omega leader transcends those ups and downs. It's the leadership style that Jesus used, and it's a concept that was coined by Lori Beth Jones.
Very good. Very well done. I liked when you said it's what we're all aiming to achieve.
And tonight we're taking that vision and that focus, that paradigm of the Omega leader, and we're focusing in tonight on vision. Shelley writes for us tonight that history repeatedly has shown that people hunger for something larger than themselves. Leaders who offer that will have no shortage of followers. In fact, higher purpose is such a vital ingredient to the human psyche that Scripture reads, where there is no vision, the people perish. So tonight, Studio G in partnership with Lori Beth Jones and her work on leadership, we're going to together explore how to create a place where women can really understand the importance of vision as a mega leader. So with that, we're going to pass the baton on to Lori Beth to kind of open us up with her general thoughts on the topic.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, I was thinking when you said Shelley's on the road, people think, well, she's in maybe in a hotel room or a business meeting. She is literally driving, so she is on the
Woo-hoo!
Road.
Here we are. Here we are.
Talking about
Indio
a second ago.
In her spiffy Mini Coupe. So stay safe, Shelley. Good, you know, traveling mercies to you. The thing about vision is that you have to have a clear picture of what the future looks like that you want to lead people into. Moses talked about the promised land. Jesus talked about heaven being a banquet. There was always a sense that you're going towards a specific place that's going to have some specific conditions. The lion is going to lay down with the lamb. Everyone's going to be under their own fig tree. So the more specific you can be with vision, the more powerful a picture you can paint, a more compelling picture, rather, that is going to draw people into that, because part of a leader's job is to take them from where they are now to where they could be. And in order to get anybody who's worked with a two-year-old or been around a two-year-old in trying to get them to give up something in their hand, you know they're not going to give up something in their hand, no matter what it is, unless you offer them something that looks more attractive. And the pearl of great price is also about vision, in a sense, because he had jewels. And he sold everything he had in order to get the pearl of great price. So vision means that you are really taking people from where they are to where they want to be by painting a compelling and detailed picture of what it will look like when they have achieved this new state of being. I've been playing around with the concept. It's something I was visiting my sister at her home in Tornillo, Texas, the other day, and she's an artist, and she had a very large frame. It was probably 4 by 3 feet wide by 4 feet tall. She's starting to paint big, which I love. And she had rested it against a blue velvet chair in her study, and there was a zebra stripe pillow on the chair. And she was just resting the frame while she got her paint set up and everything. And it just, the way the light hit the velvet on the chair and the way that the frame showed the zebra pillow, which had really always been in the room. I had never noticed it before until the frame was laying against it. And suddenly I realized this is a photograph, and I took a picture of it, and it looks like a still life that someone set up, and it just happened because a frame was around it that called your attention to the detail of the light hitting the velvet and the texture and the zebra stripes and the contrast. And so a leader's job is really to carry a big frame around with them and then frame situations, either in the negative or the positive. You can say, you can put a frame around something and you can say, this is not acceptable. It is not acceptable that, you know, it could be behavioral, it could be conditional, it could be about a status. It is not acceptable that people should be eating the crumbs from the king's table. So that is a frame of a vision that the leader is not going to accept anymore. So then in the positive, the leader would frame a new picture saying, you will be seated at the head of the table with me as my honored guest. That is the vision that God has for you, not the vision of you scrambling for crumbs under the table. So vision is about taking that large frame with you and framing what you want people to look at and see, hopefully in the positive, sometimes in the negative if you need to get their attention. So kind of I've been playing around with that frame a lot, and our friend Tammy Heim says, oh my goodness, I can just see you on the stage with that, you know, carrying this long frame, mm-hmm. I mean this large frame, as really leadership. Our job is to focus people and frame what's important and what needs to happen in order to have the life that the leader sees for their people.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I say that's really, really clear. One of the things that I struggle with, and I don't know if it's just me or other leaders as well have struggled with it, but the difference between vision and mission, how would you distinguish that? I don't know if they're on a continuum or
a lot of people. Didn't mean to walk on you there.
No, you go ahead. You got the
segue.
Yes,
yeah. That is a very common misconception, and it's important to know the difference. A mission is always about action, and it is the purpose. It is what you came here to do. In other words, my mission is to recognize, promote, and inspire divine connection in myself and others. That is action. It's actionable. You can ask yourself, am I doing it in this moment? Yes. Why am I on a radio show on a Thursday night? Because I want to inspire divine connection in myself and hopefully the Studio G team somewhere on the freeway with Shelley and also, you know, our many listeners. So that is a mission. It is a short, simple statement about what you came here to do. A vision is a long, flowery, detailed, ever-expanding picture of what the world will look like when the changes that you see have become real. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it would be. And it would be, I guess, connected to the mission. It would be the changes that that result because of your mission lived out.
Yes. Yes. So as a result of living my mission, X happened. So, for example, the Founding Fathers, when they got together in Philadelphia, they wrote a very short and simple mission statement. We are here in order to form a more perfect union. Boom. That was it.
Right.
That's why they gathered. That's why they took their donkeys and their mules and their carriages through mud and mosquito-infested summertime, and that's what they came here to do. And then someone asked the question, what would a more perfect union look like? And that's how we got the Bill of Rights. Well, In a more perfect union, we would have the freedom of speech, the right to assemble, freedom of worship, all these different things, which was actually an inverse negative of what they were suffering under the king. So if you look at the Bill of Rights, it was really the positive picture of what they had taken away or had never enjoyed under the king of England. So I think that's the best way to, you know, they were very clear about it. They had gathered to do one thing, and then they needed to paint the picture of what it would look like when that more perfect union was formed. And that's, you know, the Constitution is all about that. And when you think about the Constitution really only being 300 pages long, and all of our law, legal system, justice system, everything always goes back to that simple document, which was really a vision of what the founding fathers wanted this union to look like and how it was to conduct its business.
So it often comes out of a response of an undesirable reality or undesirable, less than what it should be, kind of present, and paints a picture of the better future.
That is beautifully said. I don't think I could have said it better. Go ahead.
I think you already did.
No, that was really, really excellent conceptualizing around it.
I agree, and the vision brings hope. I think the word vision, for me, is equivalent to hope.
Right.
And hope for a better future, hope for a better me, hope for a better environment, you know, whatever our passions or our activities are right now, if you have a vision of something better, and that's also a target to shoot for, right?
Yes.
And I have a question. Let's say that you have a vision. I had a vision last week.
Right.
And it's a this nice, bright future, right?
Right.
How often can you refer to your vision, depending on what you are going through, or?
How often can you, I'm sorry,
refer back to your vision?
Refer
and
back to it?
Yeah.
You mean
and
refer
expand
or
it?
Revise?
Well,
revise.
No, you have a vision. How often do you go back to either clarify, be more specific, or try to remember how it was? You know, what can help somebody to polish that vision?
That's such a beautiful question. And the answer is often and always refer to the vision. And one of the things I write about in the book, and I also talk about in the seminars, is that when Michelangelo was going to carve the Statue of David, he got a rejected marble from the Carrara quarries. Nobody could do anything with it because it had a big flaw in the middle of it. And so all he had was raw material. And they said that he spent something like 90 days just studying it. He slept on top of it. He slept around it. I mean, he knew intimately what that stone looked like. And then he brought in the model of the young shepherd boy. And when people asked him, he said, you know, how did you carve this incredible human out of this lump of rock? He said, it was simple. He said, I just chipped away everything that didn't look like David.
Mm.
So I think that goes to the heart of your question, Vicki, about the process. That
yes.
when you once you have the vision, you chip away everything that doesn't look like it. Which goes to your point too, Alyssa, that sometimes it's the negative. It doesn't look or feel right for me to have a client that is yelling at me and calling me names. That is not my vision. I chip that away. And if that's the state I'm in, which I was when I had my advertising, when I was working for another ad agency, and I wrote that I will never again be abused by a client, and I never have been. So, you know, I have clients that love me, and that was part of my vision. I
right.
only work with people who respect my gifts. Go ahead.
Right. So can you hear me okay?
Yep.
So that brings another thought, Lori, about vision is if you think of it in terms of chipping away what doesn't look like your vision and getting rid of that and putting it aside, when you get closer to your vision and you move into it and it's in view and it's becoming more crystal clear. I think this gets to Vicki's question as well. You might reach some of the goals that have led to part of the vision, but maybe you're still not in the promised land or the vision hasn't been fully realized. You know, are there steps into the vision, or does it just all show up at one time?
Well, it does not show up all at one time, except in the mind of the leader who sees it as if it were
<Yeah.
laughs> and particularly when fires or, you know, the fires, it's so frustrating because you see it. Like Martin Luther
sure.
King, I have a dream. I see a land. I see a time when people will not be judged by the color of skin. That was not his reality, but he saw it in his heart. And so part of the leader's job is to hold the vision while the rest of time and energy mass and all people's hearts and wills merge into that. Nelson Mandela had to hold the vision for 27 years while a whole nation caught up
right.
to what
right.
he saw as being just. True. So, and then in one of my books, I talk about launch, the lurch, the lessons, and the love, which is kind of a quick way of saying that when you get the vision and you see it, that's the launch. It's like, oh man, it's so real, I can taste it, and you get everybody excited. And this is, you know, we're gonna. You picture the Israelites leaving Egypt. You know, wow, we got their. We're not only leaving, we got their gold too. This is so cool, you know, and they're. They're really excited, and then you hit the lurch, which is, what do you mean there's a big sea in front of us that we got to cross? Oh, how
yeah.
are we going to now? Now they're chasing us. And so you go from euphoria to near panic because the exact opposite of what you thought was going to happen happens. And you see that time and time again in Scripture. It's almost, Joseph Campbell might call it a mythological constant that... Joseph had a dream, you know, where his brothers were bowing down to him, and the next thing you know, he's in the bottom of a well. You know, how low can you get? And yet, so he went from the launch to the lurch, and then he got sold into slavery and spent a lot of time in a foreign land learning his skill set and exercising his skill set of interpreting dreams and also administration, and that's the lesson. And then he merged into the love of being in the convergence of power, to use your term, Shelley, about the leadership model of convergence, that suddenly he was in the love and the lessons. So that's kind of a short synopsis of what I have observed many times. And if you look in Scripture, you will see it time and time again. Jesus went from the star of Bethlehem and the shepherds coming and the people waving palm fronds, you know, and then boom, they're killing him, spitting on him, doing the exact opposite. So the launch, the lurch, and then we had to learn the lessons of his love.
As you're talking about that, one of the questions, and it may be redundant, but one of the questions I kind of had was, one of your concepts in Jesus CEO is the Wowsy concept, with or without someone, and I think your response now kind of ties into that, you know. How does the Amiga leader, you know, what do you do when you're without someone else? What do you do with that vision in that time? Do you move forward and just, you know, do you wait? Do you reflect? Do you seek followers?
All of the above.
Or do
all
you
of the above.
Fudge forward.
Well, yes, and sometimes you just have to hold the note. I talk about the soprano that can hit if she hits a high C note and holds it, she
mm-hmm.
can shatter glass. She can shatter crystal. It doesn't shatter instantly. So the minute she starts emitting that high C, perfect pitch note, wave vibrations go towards the crystal glass.
Mm-hmm.
She has to hold that note, trusting that the vibration of that note is going to implode the vibration of the glass, and it will. But if she doubts and wavers and quits because it didn't happen instantly, then did the physics change? No, her faith wavered.
Mm.
And that's, I love the whole concept of physics and faith, because the more we learn about atoms and energy and and vibrations and sound. It really just confirms things that Jesus told us years ago. If you keep your faith without wavering, it will be done for you. And so the leader's job with the vision is to keep holding that perfect pitch, high C, no matter whether the goblet shatters instantly or 10 minutes later or 10 years later, mm-hmm. or Nelson Mandela 27 years later, or, you know, our forefathers never really got to see the perfect union
yes.
that they fought for. I mean, George Washington, some of them did, but it was messy the whole time while yes. they were going through it.
Are there leaders that have a more natural disposition to have visions than others? And I'm just thinking elementally, are there more favorable conditions to have a vision? Or have a vision with more details that you can communicate versus a little cloudy vision?
Well, I'm thinking of the people in Scripture. So I think that Joseph was a fire, definitely a fire. So he had a vision, but he had to be humbled again and again. I think it was a fire earth. Had to be humbled, and it was interesting how many times he went into the water, into the depths of a prison, which, if you know, prisons in those times leaked a lot. I mean, they were underground. So
right.
he was constantly plunged into the water to be purified in that sense. Jesus held the vision, and we believe he had all of the elements. I'm thinking of Mary received the vision of Jesus, and I think she was a water. Esther received the vision. She was a water. So to answer your question, I think any element can be given the vision.
I wonder, in speaking of the elements, I like that. I think, you know, it's, as you were speaking at first, you think maybe of the fires being the keepers of the vision. Speaking of the fire, of course, I'm the keeper of the vision. But I loved how you stated that, you know, I was thinking of a mother. Every mother has a vision for her child.
Oh, beautiful, yes.
You know, every parent does. And one of the, but speaking of the elements, so, you know, obviously every element has vision, and maybe they communicate that vision differently. But maybe turning that around also, if you wouldn't mind talking to, as a leader, communicating vision to the different elements that she might have on her team, is there a correlation to how vision is communicated according to your element? If I'm at the receiving end and I'm a water, are you going to communicate vision differently to me than you would if I were a fire, than you would if I were a wind, than you would if I were a water, me as a member of your team?
Exactly. That is so well put, because any elemental leader can hold a vision and receive a vision, but it takes education in order to communicate it to the different elements so that they receive it. Because you may, let's say you're a wind water, you're going to really feel it.
Okay.
You're going to sense the emotions of the people, and but can you communicate it to a fire in a way that they see the tasks and the results that are going to happen as a result of it?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. My mother was in the emergency room this weekend, and that's why I'm up here. And so here I am. I'm a wind fire, and I'm communicating to my siblings what the status is. So I called my brother, and I said, well, this is what happened, and he immediately went, has her general practitioner been notified that she's there? What medication? You know, it was really annoying to me, because
mm-hmm.
I was all about the drama of it, and he wanted the details of it.
Right.
And then when I talked to my sister, who is a water, she was saying, well, how are you feeling? How's mom? And how's everybody feeling? And I could relate, you know, a little bit more to that, but it was so initially annoying to talk to an earth in that moment, because I really felt the drama of it.
Right. And,
but he was also feeling the drama of it, but in his own way, you see. The way
yeah.
he could relate to the situation was, what's her medication? Where are the doctors? Who's talking to her? All of those different things. So I think that was a really profound question that you asked, because we need to understand that not every element is going to feel it the way we feel it, if we're winds and waters, or get it the way that we are so immersed and absorbed in it. Let's say if we're a fire, you know, the passion around it, the earths may look like they don't care, you know, because they're not all passionate about it, but they will demonstrate their passion through the details and the documentation.
They need more information about it before they decide they're jumping on board.
Right.
Yeah, and the thing that's hitting me right now is what you just said, Lori, was I think about the church and how so many times there's a pastoral leader, male or female, that tries to cast a vision, who might be a wind or a fire or maybe water or earth, but the language and the picture and the graphics in that oral description hits every person in the congregation a little bit differently.
Right.
And they exit on Sunday morning and they were like, what was that? So I think that, this elemental piece truly, it would be an interesting conversation and show just to have around vision. How people hear vision and see vision, was it spoken elementally or, as a water, if a fire is up there blazing, the charismatic, evangelical, presence. And, wow, it just kind of hit me. I don't know if you want to speak to any of that, but I think it's a huge piece in leadership, but particularly I think in the church it shows up in a variety of ways, and maybe that pastor sits around for a year or two and scratches her head when she leaves, like, what happened there? What was my time out? Or, I thought
right.
I was... Yeah, well, so maybe you want to think that.
And that's why I think, if we could really share this information with everybody and educate people that if you are going to communicate something, you have that elemental matrix. What are the earths going to want to know about this? They're going to want documentation, detail, foundational information. What are the waters going to need to hear about it? They're going to need to hear how this is going to affect the relationships, and we need to demonstrate that this we have reflected on this, and we need feedback from them on their reflection. And then if the wind, is the wind going to be able to have freedom to move quickly on this? And then the fires, do they see the results that are going to come as a result of this vision? If everybody... no matter what element you were, if you checked off those four quadrants, you would have far greater buy-in than just trying to get up there and yell and scream and you do your fire thing or wind fire thing and then wonder why people didn't buy in. Well, it must be because they don't love God. But
right.
That's not it at all. They just didn't relate.
Yeah. That's very powerful. Well, Lori, as we're finishing up, and one of the things that as we've been sitting here, we have about 2 minutes, so I'm going to pass the baton to you to close us out, but I was thinking, spent some time with Shelley today, who was working with my staff and working with the elements, and we spent some time speaking with a pastor about bringing the pastor teams into the community, and as I was speaking with him, I was, it's just visions were kind of popping in and out of my head, and as I was sitting here tonight and we're looking at this and I was reading Shelley's write-up about describing the show, I was thinking of just the vision that Shelley has had for Studio G and truly coming together and empowering women. And that vision started as a conversation, as a discussion after dinner, a little less than a year ago. And
right.
Here we are impacting how many people, Vicki?
5,444 followers, continuous followers.
On just this one leg as that vision begins to be fleshed out. And vision is, it's important to dream and then and to act. And with that, I'm going to pass the baton to you to close us out, Lori.
Well, I just feel moved to prayer right now. And Lord, I just want to thank you for the vision of the heart. Not everybody who has eyes can see. And when we feel a vision, when we feel a stirring of something that we want to be different in the world, help us to seek you about it, to believe you about it, and then to hold that vision as if our life depended on it and the lives of others depended on it as well. And I thank you for the visionary leadership of Alyssa and Vicki and Shelley, who constantly inspire me to be a visionary leader. Bless you all, and listen, look, hold that frame, and be a visionary. Thank you so much, all of you, tonight. Many blessings to you.
Thank you, Lori Beth.
All righty. Good night.
Thank you, Lori. And thank you, everybody else, for joining us tonight. We look forward to getting together with you again next week as we continue our discussions on women in leadership following the model of the Omega Leader. Good night, and have a great evening.
Good job hosting, Alyssa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Studio G.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.